Today's Dharma talk is from the other side of the world, from the Southern Hemisphere, from Madame Kalyano, who's abbot of Bodhinvana Monastery near Melbourne in Australia. It's called The One Who Knows, and it was given in October 2012. Practicing meditation, we're developing the quality of knowing, the one who knows, bringing our attention inwards, using the breathing to focus our attention, becoming fully aware of the in-breath from the start to the finish, fully knowing the out-breath from the start to the finish, even aware of the space between the in-breath and the out-breath and the next in-breath. It's this inner quality of knowing that is so valuable in our path of practice. All the wisdom of the Buddha developed out of this kind of knowing of the citta, the heart, that which lies at the center of our experience of this body and mind. Becoming more and more in touch with the citta, using the breathing, keeping in touch with it from moment to moment. It's this one who knows, the knowing that lies at the center of all of our experience, all the sense impressions we gain moment by moment, day by day, come back down to the mind itself, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, internal concepts, ideas, all arise and come back to this one point. We're training to know the mind moment to moment. This is going against the normal habit of human beings, to always let the mind go outwards to know things about, to know things in the world through the senses. The Buddha in his wisdom saw that normally the untrained mind becomes entangled in the world. There's not enough mindfulness, not enough wisdom to prevent that happening. And that entanglement brings suffering. So the mind is constantly experiencing suffering of different kinds. Smaller, minor suffering, sometimes very deep suffering. Everything we get to know through our senses is bringing impressions to the mind. Then everything the mind thinks up further affects itself. All our volitions, our thoughts, our moods. If there's no guidance to this, we don't train ourselves to really know what's going on. Then we'll keep tending to falling into suffering. We keep making karma, and often negative karma, which brings results back to the mind, leaves impressions of suffering and negativity. Even the good karma we make in the wholesome volitions still has an effect on the mind, still generate more karma, leave more impressions on the mind. But unless we practice mindfulness of one form or another, we never become aware of this process, never fully understand where suffering arises or why or how. So we're training in mindfulness of the in-breath and out-breath, going against the habits and the stream of our normal consciousness, our normal thinking, normal movement of the mind, restlessness and agitation, liking and disliking. We're setting that aside, bringing attention to the breath in the present moment. The mind starts to settle down, becomes more steady, more firm, because of the presence of mindfulness and this quality of knowing. This quality of knowing arises from within the mind itself, from the citta being trained in mindfulness. And it has a protective aspect to it, protects the mind from falling. Firstly, falling into negative, unwholesome thought, volitions, which bring with them agitation, restlessness, negativity of different kinds. The presence of mindfulness prevents the mind falling into that, so it starts to relax and feel peaceful, happy and content within itself, the more we practice in this way. If we keep practicing, this sense of firmness, steadiness increases, becomes more natural, more automatic for the mind. As it practices, becomes easier to achieve this through the practice. So we can start to experience a state from time to time, maybe where the mind is protected from itself, from its underlying tendencies, that when unchecked, unguarded, lead to suffering. It's protected from itself, from the anusaya kilesa, the latent tendencies or proclivities, these underlying, deeply embedded habits of the mind that condition the arising of kilesa, of greed, anger, delusion, and all their offshoots. The firm, steady state of continuous mindfulness is protected against that. The mind becomes wholesome, so it experiences some peace, some inner relaxation from that. It's in a noticeably different state from normal, where it is caught into agitated thinking, powered by kilesa, these underlying kilesa. When the mind is more peaceful, then Ajahn Chah compared it to a chicken in its cage, in its coop. It can walk around inside, but it's limited by the boundaries of the cage. So it's actually protected from outside harm and danger. It can move around a little bit, but cannot get up to too much mischief or into too much trouble. This is the mind that has attained some mindfulness. The one who knows is present, observing, protecting, and guarding over the mind. So there's enough flexibility and space that the mind can let sense impressions come up, maybe, but the one who knows can see them, because they're all coming down to the mind. The one who knows can see the reactions, and see the reactions that start to form some unwholesome tendencies that lead to suffering. Can see the causes, the conditions that are creating suffering. Like the chicken in the cage, it can move around enough, but not so much that it gets into trouble. Once the mind is steady and firm like this, it's light, it's relaxed, it's bright. Then sometimes you can trust it to experience sense objects and watch what happens. You can actually learn where suffering is arising. The eyes see a form, the eyes are open. If the mind is peaceful, it can sometimes risk opening the eyes. Or when we finish meditation, sitting meditation, or when we're walking meditation, the eyes are open, there's light. So sense objects, forms, come to the eyes, come down to the mind. We can observe the sanya vedana arising, the impression, what the mind makes out of it, what it creates out of that impression, names it, labels it, perhaps starts to create some liking or aversion for that form. When the mindfulness of the one who knows is there, we can see that process happening. We can see our old karmic conditioning, ripe. The seeds have been sown, and it's ripe for kilesa to arise, some form of attachment, craving, an attachment to come up, liking or disliking, greed, anger or delusion in one form or another. But if the one who knows is there, it can catch that process as it's happening. It can learn from that, observe what's happening and learn. If it's clear enough in its own practice, then it's possible for everything to be in place for kilesa to arise, but it doesn't arise because mindfulness and wisdom are there to counter it, to prevent kilesa arising. Or maybe kilesa just begins to arise, but it's cut off by mindfulness and wisdom, by the one who knows. Maybe there's a feeling and something is made out of the feeling in the sense impression. But there's enough mindfulness not to let it lead to verbalization. So there's a small movement of the mind, but then the mind, under the guidance of the one who knows, just drops it, doesn't let it go into mental verbalization, proliferation, agitation. The mind drops it, then returns to peace and further mindfulness. Returns to that place of mindfulness where it's one pointedly focused on the breathing. Or if the breath has disappeared at that point, where the breath has disappeared, just knowing the mind itself from moment to moment. So we're training the mind like sharpening a blade on a stone. We keep rubbing it. It becomes more refined, more sharp, more pointed. We keep training the one who knows. Keep catching kilesa arising, seeing them for what they are, and quite willingly and quite contentedly letting them go, knowing that they're suffering if the mind grabs hold of them and continues to be proliferated and affected by them. As we practice meditation, breathing in, breathing out, we say we're learning to bring the mind to the place in the middle, where it's neither falling into delight or aversion, for the sense impressions that connect it to the world. So we say delight or aversion for the world. Just knowing these things as they are, and knowing the vedana, that is stimulated by sense impressions or internal memories and ideas, seeing sanya forming some form or other, some kind of giving importance to that sense impression and the feeling, giving value to it, creating a self around it, but then catching it with the one who knows, dropping it again, letting it go, seeing it as just a sense impression that arises and passes away without getting involved with it. Seeing it as unsatisfactory, unstable, changeable, seeing it as not self, seeing it as a condition of mind that arises, passes away according to causes. If you have an insight into this just once, it can stick in the mind for a long, long, long time. It's like that moment when you click, you've been trying to learn a new skill, learning to use a sewing machine, for example. It's been very difficult, but then suddenly it clicks and you get the rhythm and the movement of the hand right and the feeling of the cloth through the machine right and the speed right. It clicks and you know what you're doing. In the same way, the one who knows can know a kilesa for what it is, can see a kilesa, see how it forms in the mind, the conditions that support the arising of a kilesa, catch it, see it for what it is and let it go, not be fooled, deluded by it, not get caught into it or bought into it. And every time that happens and the mind returns to a state of emptiness. Emptiness where both mindfulness and wisdom is present. Seeing kilesa for what it is and dropping it, letting it go, returning to this underlying awareness of the one who knows. The spaciousness of mind that's not grasping. What we call emptiness, meaning the emptiness of grasping or attachment, emptiness of delusion, emptiness of self, the delusion of self. But it's not emptiness of wisdom. As Ajahn Chah said, the mind that is empty is actually full of wisdom, meaning that the clarity is so strong, so bright, the wisdom is so full and complete. It sees the anicca dukkha anatta of kilesa. It sees as if the footsteps of kilesa leading up to it arising, sees that, but then doesn't grab hold of it, so it just fades away. So we practice anapanasati. We keep coming to this point where there is just the one who knows, catching things and letting them go, bringing the mind to equanimity over and over again, bringing it to the state in the middle, neutrality, not getting caught into different moods, not getting caught into mental proliferation. We'll see sometimes that training, that ability is strong, the skill is strong, we've developed it well, and then it will fade again. We're back to, as if, square one. The mind is thinking all over the place, prey to its experience of vedana, pushed around by dukkha vedana, becoming very agitated or depressed, becoming obsessed by sukha vedana, becoming excited, stimulated, just like a soccer ball being kicked around. The mind gets kicked around by vedana and the attachment to that, and then the proliferation that comes from it. But we have to practice. We have no choice, especially if you have had some insight into this. You've seen how mind is the most valuable thing we have. How can we let it just get kicked around like a soccer ball? In the past, we've let it go for so long. We've let it run with sense impressions and moods for the world. And what did it bring us? It didn't bring us any lasting happiness or peace. It just took us further and further away from the Dhamma, getting us more entangled in the world, more confused, more prey to kilesa, formed out of our experience of dukkha vedana, sukha vedana. Once we start to develop the one who knows, though, we have a way, a system, a method of learning to actually look after our mind, our most valuable thing. Then we see the value of all the other aspects of practice as well, how they affect the mind. We talk about it as the 10 parami sometimes. You see how all these qualities are what support the mind, nourish the mind, feed the mind and keep it peaceful and bright, support the arising of insight. All the parami working together help that. The value of dana parami, sila parami, nikama parami, kanti parami, Wirya, Panya, Satya, Adhitana, Metta, Upeka. All Aparami are supportive of this practice of developing the one who knows. The one who knows appreciates their roles as well, sees the value of developing them. As our wisdom parami develops, we see the value of sila in supporting our practice. We see how sila restrains the mind from this tendency to go out and get entangled with the world. We're restraining our speech, restraining our actions. We can keep the mind more peaceful, limit its activity, and develop more sense of inner composure and restraint. We see the value of the Vinaya and the precepts. This is something because it's based on wisdom. It's inner knowing, based on the one who knows. It's not just based on fashion or the cultural values of the world, which may be right or may be wrong. It's inner knowing, based on wisdom and the one who knows. One actually knows and sees for oneself without doubt. One knows that it's correct and supportive of the practice to keep sila. One doesn't doubt that. One sees the value of nikama, renunciation, not constantly seeking sense pleasure. One sees the value of dana, the wholesome dharmas that come from generosity, from service. One sees the value of kanti, endurance and patience, the sense of bearing with the difficulties of training the mind when it gets caught into kilesa, learning to restrain it, re-establish the one who knows. Even when things seem really difficult, it sees the value of bearing with it, going through that till one gets back the more steady state of mind. One sees the value of satya adhitana. It's the resolution that can bring the mind to attend to the Dhamma, points the mind to the Dhamma, to the truth. When we practice determined resolution of satya adhitana, we can burn off many kilesa, see them as just impermanent things arising, passing away, so we're not being swayed from our practice or from our goal. See the practice of metta and karuna, how it underlies, like dana, the wholesome dharmas that support the arising of one who knows. Support keeping the mind, keeping the one who knows in mind. This quality of inner knowing has to be supported by metta, a sense of well-being and well-wishing for oneself and for others, based on an understanding of the value of the mind and training the mind, not just getting caught up into the superficial nature of the world that goes out to sense impressions and objects all the time. True metta is seeing the value of training the heart, freeing it from greed, hatred and delusion, and then seeing that in others as well. Seeing the value of one's own mind, the value of other people's minds, seeing that the mind itself is what defines our happiness and suffering. As a human being, we have a mind that can be trained. But as human beings, we don't all train because we don't all have the wisdom or the parami to see the value of that. When we develop metta and karuna and the Brahma-viharas, we're seeing the value of the spiritual path for helping us and for helping others. Can see that the mind of a true human being is a manusa. Manusa means that one with a high mind, a higher mind. One can have a human body, but sometimes the mind can go low when it gets caught into unwholesome states. Becomes the mind of a manusa dirachano, the mind of an animal, even though the body is the body of a human. Or the mind of manusa can go higher, manusa deva, the mind of Devata, where Hiriyotapa is established, a sense of restraint and shyness to do any kind of evil, even have an evil thought. So established that the mind just won't indulge in evil thought, evil action. True metta is where we're developing these inner qualities, the one who knows, and training the mind to free it from suffering, and also to understand that it's in the interest of others to free themselves from suffering, wishing to help them to free them from suffering. Ultimately, upeka parami, the hardest to develop perhaps, the perfect equanimity towards one's own suffering, towards others' suffering, understanding of karma and then this quality of mindfulness, the one who knows. not to let the suffering we're experiencing as vipaka karma, as our resultant karma, sway us from the path, make us give up, make us fall into wrong behavior, into unwholesome thoughts, speech, and action, in great equanimity towards all formations, physical, mental. Ultimately, the upeka, based on seeing the anicca, dukkha, anatta of the khandhas, no longer taking this body and mind as a self, no longer believing in a self as a fixed idea, having enough mindfulness as the one who knows to be equanimous towards the khandhas. See them as anicca, their conditions that arise and pass away, whatever subject to arising, subject to cessation. Every volition we have, however refined, superior, peaceful, it's still a volition, a thought, a mental state. This body is a formation, and developing equanimity towards the body and all the vedana it brings us, just seeing it for what it is, knowing it for what it is with the one who knows, knowing the body is impermanent, subject to aging, old age, sickness and death. Inescapable truths, not letting the mind get swayed by that, just knowing that's the way of the body. When the body stops functioning, then the other khandhas break up, so they're all impermanent as well. They can't be sustained. Without a body, they break up. Even the power of karma leads the citta to be reborn, to take on future births. The khandhas themselves arise and pass away. There's nothing in there to be grasped at. So all these parami we're developing, these support the practice, and they all arise out of the one who knows that we're training, as we train in mindfulness of breathing. Developing wiriya and learning how to keep bringing up energy in the practice, keep coming back to it. Wiriya sounds active. It doesn't always mean being active physically. It can mean just putting energy, effort into a posture, learning to sit still and not wriggle around, move around when you're meditating. Wiriya can be sitting still, setting yourself a target, saying, I'm going to sit still without moving for half an hour, for an hour, for 2 hours, 3 hours. Bringing up the mindfulness to complete that task with the other parami as well. Wiriya to bring up the effort to bring up mindfulness, say when you're sleepy first thing in the morning or last thing at night. Wiriya to get up, or to keep practicing when you're a bit tired but could go on a bit longer. Wiriya to pull your mind away from distraction when you just want to seek distraction, don't want to practice mindfulness because it all seems too boring or difficult. All the parami are tools for us to develop. When they become parami, they become something inside the mind. They become ingrained, wholesome tendencies, wholesome qualities that help us to manage and actually abandon the defilements. If we don't develop any parami, then the kilesa naturally will keep growing, becoming stronger. It's more natural for us to follow the kilesa than to follow the parami. The practice, very much a battle, a competition between the kilesa and the parami, the kilesa and the one who knows. So tonight's the last night of the Vasa, and we join in the Sangha Kama of Pavarana, formal offering ourselves for admonition, giving and receiving admonition, underlying skillful living as a community, giving a good model for all of society, understanding that we all have our kilesa and our habits, our character traits, which are not always in line with each other, can affect each other in different ways. We're not all perfect. It's that willingness, understanding to drop one's ego a little bit sometimes, to admit faults and weaknesses. Sometimes things need to be said. It may not be tonight, but it's an attitude one develops in the holy life, that one sometimes has to be able to listen to others, to let them communicate what they need to us. Sometimes we have to communicate what we have to others. so that there's no suppressed bad feeling or disharmony, disquiet in our own minds. That needs to be addressed. Leaving it unaddressed can be an obstacle in the practice as well, especially if we leave each other and separate. It's not good to separate with bad feeling or a sense of disharmony. So a very skillful karmic tool that the Buddha gave us to end the vasa, performing the pawarana and as a good example to the lay community in how to live skillfully, say, as a family or a society. So I'll leave the talk here, leave these words for your reflection.